This is Power Athlete Radio. With your hosts, Denny Kay, Professor Booty, and the Luke Summers. And now, toes forward, hips locked, shoulders set, and retract those scapulas. It's time for some knowledge bombs.
Hey everyone. Thanks for tuning into Power Athlete Radio. I am Chauncey. I am the new overlord of Power Athlete Radio. Carly unexpectedly lost her voice this week from yelling at all her cats. She installed me on her computer. I am a product by Skynet. You are all doomed. This week we speak with MMA fighter and friend of Power Athlete HQ, Tyler Minton. We talk all about training, cutting weight, and dealing with the personalities of the sport. Tyler is also one of the best nutrition gurus in cahoots with Power Athlete. His approach has helped athlete after athlete empower their performance while meeting weight class requirements. Listening to Tyler speak, it's evident that the mental approach to his training is as valuable if not more than the physical. His experience on The Ultimate Fighter as a former wrestler convinced him that there is nothing that he cannot physically conquer. This, of course, is coming off of many injuries including a severed fracture to his orbital among others. Tyler Minton is a busy man. In his own words, he's overworked and underfed. From cutting weight to running a gym with his wife, he has suffered from adrenal fatigue and blackouts that led him to be hospitalized. All of this in the name of sport. Learn from the successful training principles and foibles of Minton on this week's episode of Power Athlete Radio. I hope to be on all of your computers someday, soon. Very soon. Cheerio, old chaps.
Power Athlete Nation, what is up? Denny K on break. Luke here with John Fisher, who's not allowed to talk. Tex is out there on the other coast, and special guest Tyler Minton with us. And this is not a joke. If it's coming from my mouth, it's true. We are the premier podcast in strength and conditioning, and possibly Earth, the planet.
Well, it's kind of like when you talk at the seminar, you speak in these definitive sentences.
That's just my radio voice, John.
Just flow. You know what? We got to get into that flow zone. Tex, what's it called? The
flow state.
Flow state. You got to get in the flow state where you just go. And you don't even know what you're doing. You're just talking. Words are coming out.
That's my specialty.
But hands down, this is the premier podcast for strength and conditioning on the planet at this point.
Well, without further ado, why don't we skip the formalities?
The HJs?
And let's just straight up talk to Tyler. So Tyler's been out here and actually flew out to Southern California to visit with us, hang out, get to know Power Athlete, and come train with us at 6 a.m. and get beat up a little bit. But we got to know a little more about Tyler. So Tyler, why don't you let our guests know what's up?
Hey guys, man, you know, it's awesome to come here. This is one of those I've actually followed CrossFit football since 2009. I own a gym in Northeast Tennessee out in the middle of nowhere. And when we have followed, you know, the CrossFit football principles really since only a few months after you all started CrossFit football. So, you know, for me, it was really cool to kind of come out here and then see the birthplace and the people behind it. It was, you know, kind of an honor. So to work out, you know, being the weakest man in the room wasn't awesome, especially considering the fact there was a very, very small female in there. But I mean, that was really, a really awesome experience.
But arguably the most dangerous man in the room. As long as you stay out of Wellborn's 38-inch reach.
Shoot under, shoot fast. That'd be a hard man to take down as well. So,
well, I got decent balance. So, and I'm used to getting hit in the face. It just, the only difference is, I think, like, having been hit recently, I remember when I was younger and I would get hit, like, it doesn't necessarily faze you. You just kind of, like, just take it and you expect it. Now I get hit and I get that, like, instant fucking snap of, like, like, I don't know if I'm going to fucking sprint through this person or I'm going to throw like up.
Mental clarity.
Yeah, like all of a sudden everything gets singing. I get this like sick feeling and I like fucking kind of go red. And I'm like, man, like when I played football, I would take these hits and I'd be like, the harder I get hit, the more I relax I get. I'd be like, yeah, fucking bring that shit. And now it's like, I think I like hit my head on something and I got so fucking pissed. And I was like, what happened to me?
Well, is that like intelligence with age? Like you just know you're like, you know what's coming after you get into a fucking brawl?
Having fought when I was younger, like, I don't think I ever told you the story. You might've heard it on the podcast. Like I was like 14 years old and I got in the ring with a guy of similar size, but he was older. And he hit me with this fucking straight left. And I remember it like snapped my head so hard. He got me and he literally split. No, actually it was right here. He split my eye right here open. And I remember he hit me and I like kind of froze, his head snapped back. And I got this like weird feeling. And all of a sudden my coach, the guy who was, you know, was basically calling the whole deal, literally jumps on me with like a quarter. And he like pushed a quarter real hard on my cheek. It was like fucking pushing on it. I didn't really know what he was doing. And he saw it open up and he like pushed on the quarter and the quarter actually ended up keeping it, closed, and fucking I didn't start bleeding everywhere, thank God. But I remember thinking like, I'm going to play football.
protect the face.
And like, I remember when I went out and hit, I was like, this is so much more gratifying. But it even like kind of extended all the way out. I remember going into pregame and I had that same thing. Like I got to get hit hard to play. And I remember when I went to Kansas City, there was a dude named Eric Hicks who had a real fucking hard head. And I remember we were in pregame and I fucking come off with everything and I hit him and I fucking gave myself a concussion. I like hurt myself, legitimately hurt myself. And I didn't know until like 3 weeks later, Eric, I ended up hurting him too. And he like comes over to me. He's like, bro, can we take it easy in pregame? I'm like, yeah, what's up? He's like, you fucking hurt me, man. He's like, for like 3 weeks, I was feeling fucking fucked up. So he's like, let's not do this to each other. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm like, well, we don't do that, you know? Yeah. So like, I'm sure for you, you get in the ring and until you get hit, shit isn't real. You're like, you know, kind of going, all of a sudden you get hit and you're like, it's fucking go time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of what you said, 200-300 pound men hit each other. Nobody wins. There's no winner when that happens. Same thing in the cage, man. It's all the time I get people saying, you must love getting hit. No, I love getting, who loves to get hit? It sucks.
There are some fighters though. I mean, and I'm sure you've met guys that like, it's almost like that answering of the bell a little bit. Like, even when they go ding, 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 and you get out there, you know, like, and you guys, you know, you tap your hands, which is more of an MMA thing. Like in boxing, they don't really do that as much. You know, all of a sudden things are like, everybody's there kind of, you know, posturing up and you're trying to like check distances and cut everybody off. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you fucking get caught with a big one and you're like, go time. All right, let's fucking go time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tyler, we got to spend like 2.5 days, train, eat, sleep. Well, I mean, you guys spent more time than I did with Tyler, but I mean, Tyler, you got a fascinating past. You didn't do yourself any justice. Tell us, you know, so you fight, you run a gym, you work on, I mean, you're working with plenty of guys from the UFC within nutrition. So what do you do? I mean,
well, let's start. I'm sure the people would dig. You were on the Ultimate Fighter.
Exactly. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about like how you got on the Ultimate Fighter and how that went down and kind of like what happened there. And then we'll kind of get into the other stuff.
Yeah. So it was, you know, I've been a professional fighter for years now. And the whole goal is, you know, to make it to the top or tier, you know, the higher tiers, top tiers. Just kind of grinding my way through. It's time, I guess I was 5-1. You know, actually in the middle of a prep cut to 155 pounds to see if I can make 155, and I'm walking about 195, 200 pounds. But I'm also the world's best weight cut expert. So I knew I could do it. So I wasn't worried. Well, then I get a call from the UFC's The Ultimate Fighter asking if I would be interested in coming on board and actually competing at the 185, the middleweight Ultimate Fighter. Yeah, sure. Why not? Wasn't really sure where I was at, hopped on the scale, barely, depending on the time of the day, I was floating anywhere from 179 to 182, knowing that I was about to go in there and fight a bunch of guys who, you know, were 215 by the time they get in, but, you know, yeah, well, let's do it, you know, why not, it's a good opportunity, sure they don't hit that much harder, so, you know, it's went through the whole process, made it, you know, flying colors, awesome time, where I was the light guy going in, I actually got to help all the guys cut weight to kind of get there for the first fights. And so that was pretty neat, you know, getting to know. establishing the fact, hey, you know, this is what I do. I'm a weight cut guy. I actually do, you know, a lot of this for fighters. So I met some guys over there that I've since worked with. You know, and there was this one big guy in particular, walking about 220 pounds. I had to help a lot. He was having a real hard time making weight. Well, then we find out that we're fighting. You know, it was a really odd experience because this guy that was, you know, half near crying in the sauna was now like the baddest man on planet, you know, face to face with me. So it was a really interesting experience. But, you know, we go out there, fight. You know, the game plan was to use what I could with him, knowing I'm a wrestler. You know, wrestling's one of those things. If you do it right, you know, even if you're the smaller guy, you know, it takes a lot out of you. But, you know, if you do it right, you're going to get there. And we went in round one. I think I had like 7-8 takedowns. You know, won the round 10-8. Did some really cool things. There's this move called a Peterson roll, where you actually grab the guy's arm around your waist and do a roll. And I actually did a standing Peterson. So pretty much grab a guy's arm around your waist and do a front flip, and they just go with you. So did a lot of cool things. At the very beginning of round two, I caught a very good shot to the face that completely crushed my orbital. I've got like slowly deteriorating eyesight from it. Actually, I had 20/15 vision. It constantly gets worse. But crushed my orbital, real bad concussion, had some actual slight brain damage as a result. But we keep fighting, you know, lots of blows. Like I can literally, and this is what we're talking about with getting hit. People don't really don't ever anticipate that one punch when you feel your face cave in. And then that spot keeps getting hit.
I'm out.
That sounds fucking awful.
It's weird. And to some, it's very much like, all right, I'm done. And to me, it was very much you kind of go into the fight or flight. You go into a survival mode. Mm-hmm. And for me, I knew instantly. It's like, well, you know, this guy could kill me, so I better do something. So I just keep swinging. Can't see anything. Blood in my one good eye. My other eye is completely swollen shut.
What eye was this? Did he hit?
Excuse me.
What I did.
This was my lead eye.
So you're
lead eye. So you're I'm an orthodox fighter. So it was my left eye, my front eye, and then blood going into my right. Not much to do, but I knew that if I wasn't fighting, that I was going to lose. So I just started swinging everything, throwing weird elbows, everything. I knew when he touched me, this was my game plan in my own head. I knew that when he touched me, that meant he was within arm's reach. So I waited for him. He would hit me, then I would throw punches. Because I knew if he hit me, I could hit him.
For anybody here that's ever been in this situation, if you know, most guys fight with kind of a bladed stance where you obviously stagger and you kind of put your one shoulder forward, and the idea is that you reduce surface area, like you never square up to your opponent, so you kind of blade, and it kind of allows you to kind of cover distances and do some things. And the problem is, if your fucking front eye gets knocked out and you can't see, what you end up having to do is square your face up and square up your shoulders, so you have to use your opposite eye, which basically increases surface area, which means that you're going to take a fucking hammer's beating.
That's why Rocky switched stands.
Yeah, exactly.
It's, you know, it's hard to can't switch
stands. That's why you tell them to fight conventional weapons in the southpaw.
Exactly.
For those of you guys that are Rocky fans.
If you're not, you're
probably. If you're a Rocky fan, or not a Rocky fan, you're probably not listening to this podcast right now. Just, you know, that was a documentary. That wasn't a movie. That was a documentary. That was you know, not a Lifetime. That was a great documentary. But the guy ends up breaking your orbitals. Yeah, you have to fight. So you're measuring distance with your face.
I'm measuring distance with my face. And that was literally, at the time, it seemed like the best thing to do. You know, and it went on, and the fight kept going on, and Herb Dean ended up stopping it, and we talked to him later, talked to Dana White, and Dana White was just, he couldn't believe that I could take that much damage. And then after we got to talking for a little bit and talking about the other things that I do, and he said, "You're way too intelligent to be that tough." I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He goes, "Well, most people with really, you know, like that are really, really smart don't use their brain, you know, to get hit." I just kind of laughed, but Herb Dean's big thing, he said he knew that I wasn't going to go down, and when they actually stopped the fight, I was standing. I wasn't going to fall. Like there was no physical way this guy was going to knock me to the ground. And I remember Herb Dean saying, it's like, I was really afraid that if I didn't stop it, it was going to go to the final round, because, you know, you all had tied 10-8, 10-8. It was going to go to a round three, but the doctor wasn't going to let you because you were literally blind. He said, so it was up to me to risk your life in those final seconds. He said, I knew at any moment, if you took one bad shot, it could permanently mess. And it did. It I've still got permanent damage from it. I wouldn't trade it for anything, because you learn you learn a lot about yourself in those. You know, I learned a lot about how much I can take, and you know, to this day, yeah, there's really nothing that I think will ever physically beat me down. I'm convinced that you can't stop me from something. So
now this story, we were wrapping a little bit in the car ride over about the, you know, the underlying theme, which we've seen time and time time again.
Hold on.
Sounds like a bomb about to go off.
Start from wrapping on the way over.
Oh yeah, so we were driving on the way over and talking a little bit about one of the underlying themes, which we've seen happen so much in just really life recently. It's this whole no good deed goes unpunished, where you know you come out, you do somebody a solid, and then you end up fucking taking the hammer fist to the face for it. And you know, we've seen it for years. You know, and you know, working in the CrossFit gym, dealing with clients, dealing with employees and people that you know, you do somebody, you go out of your way, and then it ends up coming back to bite you. In essence, you working with that dude and really like being like a solid bro and like a solid good guy to like go in and help somebody in their weakest moment, and then all of a sudden they pit you guys and the dude is just like, fuck this guy. At that point you're like, I shouldn't help that dude cut weight.
Yeah, you know, you and you have those thoughts and stuff, but at the end of the day, it doesn't, you know, to me, you know.
But aren't there guys in the Ultimate Fighter that are basically don't, like, do anything for anybody and they just kind of, like, F everybody?
Yeah, there really are. And it's a weird thing, man. You get such a wide variety of people. You get people who are the entertainers. You get people who you know, couldn't entertain anybody, but they love the fight. You know, and it's they try to put all these people together, and it does. It gets a lot of you get a lot of weird emotions and drama and stuff. And the show's kind of, you know, I want to say it's kind of jumped the shark just because, you know, they've seen everything by now. You know, people are kind of tired of seeing the, you know, the stupid muscle heads that, you know, the gym bros or the...
That just get fucking hammered.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
The only question I always had when I watched it, do they provide your guys meals?
Yeah, you actually put in a grocery list.
But then you kind of have to cook your own stuff?
Yeah.
Because like the thing I was always tripped about, like some guys kind of cooked, and then and it was this kind of weird deal. I'm like, first of all, like how do you necessarily like organize meals with that many people in there? And then I was like, wait a minute, what if somebody like you cook your food and somebody fucking snakes it? Then you basically squaring off in the kitchen against somebody like, don't see my fucking food.
And that's happened. There was an episode once where a guy, I guess he did some things to another fighter's food. Far beyond what you could imagine. Salad. Far beyond what.
What do you do?
It's fruit salad, right?
What do you do?
He pissed in it. Well, he did that, and then in return, dude peed in his sushi or something. Like he topped dude sushi, and then so the dude like pissed in his fruit salad, and it's like that's weird. Yeah, like, come on, guys. Like, who are you?
Well, but I mean, like. The thing is, and I think people forget, like, when people become really, really good at, like, one thing, very few people will become, you know, good at everything. And it's like when you become a specialist, you specialize in one thing. And if your whole life is dedicated towards this idea, just, hey, I'm going to be the best as I can at you know, in this octagon, they sometimes forget to develop other
Social skills
or personality traits. And what's interesting is society lets people slide on that shit if you're great at stuff. It's kind of like, you know, things that normally, and we saw this, I mean, shit all the time in the NFL, where like normally things that would, you know, people would be like, hey, go fuck yourself, or more importantly, you're going to jail or have problems. People eventually let you slide because you have this incredible talent or their skill, and because, you know, they make excuses.
Star quarterback.
Yeah, well,
same
type of deal. And I it was something I always kind of fought against, and I never really liked this idea that, you know, because you can do this one thing, you don't have to develop other areas. And I always used to talk to guys about this idea of being kind of a Renaissance man. Like, having been a classics major, it was this idea of being, you know, you should be, you know, an athlete, a fighter, you should be a poet and a reader and a scholar. You know, you kind of look at all these different things. Whenever people ask me, like, man, you have a pretty diverse interest list. I'm like, well, yeah, it was by effort. I mean, really, like, to go out and try to do more and more things and have varied efforts. Because, dude, if all you do in your whole life is like, hey, I just get up in the gym, I eat breakfast, I go do this and this. At the end of the day, like 5-10 years later, you've developed no social skills. You've read no books. You've communicated in no way. And like, you're kind of one dimensional. And I'm sure you've hung out with people like that where you're like, oh, God.
Yeah, it's
like, shut the fuck up.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot in the fight world. And it goes along with what we're saying, too. You know, like when you help some out, a lot of times it comes back and you know, bites you. And I said, you know, I feel like the main reason behind that is you struggled to get there. Like you worked your butt off. You made all the mistakes. You suffered to get there. And then sometimes when you help people, you know, jump the bridge that you had to cross, they don't know what that was like. You know, like they can't feel that. They don't know what all you went through. So a lot of times they already have this high and mighty attitude because they weren't beat down on the way there. You know, and I've seen that a lot too. You go to help someone out and it bites you in the butt when in reality you should have just let them suffer like you did.
So you end up getting knocked out in the Ultimate Fighter.
I didn't get knocked out.
Well, I'm sorry.
Watch your tongue.
That's the story.
You bite your tongue.
He stopped the fight. Yeah, and then, so then you were done. How late in the season was that?
That was like right at the beginning.
Okay.
Right at the beginning, yeah.
So that was at the beginning. So you really didn't get a chance to really show what you're worth.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, like I said, it led to a lot of really good stuff. Learned a lot about myself. Had to take some time off, you know, because number one, it's a while before I could see. Yeah, some operations. Yeah, it was a mess. Went from never, you know, perfect eyesight to then I had to go get glasses. You know, so it was a mess, but, you know, and during that time it allowed me to kind of sharpen other things. And then, you know, I learned a lot. Like I said, we had hinted at earlier, as I said, I was the world's best weight cut guy. And I really am.
Well, let's get into that. So how did you, you know, like, I mean, and from everything, like, if you guys want to, you know, do some searching and some Googling on Tyler, I mean, he's the best in the game in terms of getting guys ready to make weight, fight prep, nutrition, and diet, to, you know, to get these fighters involved. Like, how did you kind of go down in that path? Was it something you tested on yourself and you figured out what worked? Or is it something that you kind of learned? Like, how did you cultivate this?
Yeah, well, this part, I didn't get to even tell you this full story. So it's be kind of the first time a lot of people have heard it. I actually had some really bad weight cuts early on in my career. I fought at the beginning of MMA when it became like more of a mainstream thing. You would weigh in, they would pick who you would fight based on, they would literally, I mean, it was like a yellow legal pad. Like, all right, this guy is 170, this other guy's 170. Hey, you two are fighting. You would show up, they'd get you matched, and you might fight 30 minutes later, you might fight 2 hours later, but no matter what, you were fighting soon after. So I would cut from 200 to 170 pounds in a week. Just the all broccoli diet. It was great. I'm writing a book. The all broccoli diet. Mm. And then cut 30 pounds in a week, and then you go out there and fight. I remember my first ever fight, my first fight in the MMA. I won in 7 seconds. Dude, we later found out, dude lost a bet with his fraternity and he had the fight. So he jumps in and goes to tackle me at the exact same time that I'm going for a guillotine. So when he comes in, my wrestling mindset says sprawl. So I guillotine this guy and sprawl, and it ends up just sticking his face right in the ground, just not being silly. Thought I broke the dude's neck. But anyway, so I stand up and the referee grabs my arm to lift me, to lift my arm up, and I fall, and he has to hold me up because I have no energy. I just cut 30 pounds. So then I do that again. My next fight was 42 seconds. Then my third fight was the first time. There was 24-hour weigh-ins. Again, horrible weight cut. But I just thought that was the norm. You know, I was a wrestler, and wrestlers cut weight bad. It's part of it. You have to suffer to cut weight. That was the thing. You know, there was this misconception. You had to fight at the lowest weight class you could possibly suffer to get to. You needed to almost die. And the lowest weight class you can get to without actually dying is where you should be. And we just thought that was a badge of honor is how that's supposed to be. And, you know, I went pro, experimented some at 185. I'm just way too small for 185. Most of those guys are 6'2", 215, 220 pounds. New 170 is where I needed to be, if not 155. Well, then the Ultimate Fighter actually calls me for a fight at 170. But shortly before that, I had opened up my own gym. So I had opened up my own gym. I was CrossFitting 2 times a day, 6 days a week. I was having one off day. I was following a strict paleo zone diet. You know, and those of you who know what's up, you know that I'm about to die.
Yeah, been there.
Doing all these things, you know, training MMA full time. On top of that, I'm running a gym. Me and my wife opened up a business 3 days before we got married. So then I'm a newly married business owner, professional fighter that's underfed, overstressed, and overworked. Sleeping 2-3 hours a night, but you know, I didn't need it because I had 20 cups of coffee a day. Just doing everything right. So then the UFC actually calls me about fighting on the Ultimate Fighter. Well, at this time, when I got the call, I had just left the doctor's office, the doctor telling me, you know, like, hey, you're about to go into adrenal failure. Like, you're in adrenal fatigue. Your kidneys are about to fail. Like, you got to get some things done now. I actually suggested I take time off of everything. You need to sleep. You need to quit working out. You need to quit doing this, that, the other. I'm like, oh, yeah, well, that's fine. I'm tough. I'm a fighter. I'll make it. So I end up, I make weight. I go in, make weight, and then the weirdest thing happens. I wake up, and there's paramedics all around me. No idea what happened. I blacked out. Well, then this goes on for hours and hours, and come to find out, I later admitted, I didn't tell at the time, I was in the hotel room cutting weight. I kept blacking out. I was cutting weight in a bathtub, and I kept blacking out in the bathtub and waking up and looking at my watch. My God, it's 30 minutes. This kept happening, kept on. I remember being in a hotel room in Las Vegas, writing a letter to my wife, to give to the producers, like telling her, like, I knew I was about to die. Like, so when people say that they have that moment when they see death, it sounds really weird and mystic, but I was there. I was putting drops of water down into my eye just so I could see, because my eyes were so dry. I was like swashing water in my mouth and spitting so I could talk, because my mouth was so dry I couldn't put words together. So I'm writing a letter to my wife, like, you know, telling her I love her and stuff, because I'm not going to see her. It's the dumbest thing on earth. And one shouldn't have to go through all that. But again, man, it's a regular part of fighting. It really is. And you're starting to see that a lot in the UFC. So I had, you know, fairly, or about a year before that, I actually went to a CrossFit Nutrition Seminar with Rob Wolf, which was, you know, absolutely amazing. It was a great, great process. Learned a lot.
Yeah, that guy.
Learned a lot, you know, learned about, a lot about what he said. But, you know, I missed the finer points. So I actually contact Rob. I email him, and he was, you know, nice enough to respond. He responded in a very cold, very, very no detail response. And I knew in his head, he's thinking, oh, this is just some nobody kid who just wants to, you know, take my knowledge and use it, and he's not going to listen. So I keep emailing him and literally harass this guy. And it's like, I harassed him until he refused to not actually talk to me. So he actually starts working with me, and we become friends. And, you know, all the things I was doing wrong, I was a very strict paleo dieter, you know, paleo diet person. But I was not living a paleo lifestyle, obviously. You know, I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't going to bed at dark and sleeping till daylight. I wasn't
wearing a loincloth.
Yeah, I wasn't.
You weren't running through the Serengeti with like a spear, looking for an animal. But I was squat, sunrising.
I wasn't doing any of that. But I wasn't doing anything right, you know, and that's what he was like, man, you know, he insulted me several times, you know, a lot.
You know, Rob's got an interesting way of insulting
me. But it's like tactful.
Well,
It's really cerebral. So, like, he'll, like, say something, and you'll be like, oh. And then, like, 2 days later, I'm like, I think he landed a blow on me.
Yeah.
He's really smart. He just fucking pulled it recently on me where when I got out of the NFL, I Tyler had taken a lot of shots to the head. And I remember, talking with Rob actually a couple weeks ago, and he's like, yeah, it was like that period when you were all fucked up. I'm like, what do you mean I was all fucked up? He's like, well, like, I didn't want to tell you, but, you know, like, you would, like, we would talk on the phone, we'd rap about something, and, like, you know, we would have, like, a discussion, and, like, a couple hours later, you would call me, and we would have the exact same discussion. And I was like,
repeater.
We did. And he's like, and it kind of started happening kind of, you know, often, and I got, like, a little nervous, like, oh, my good friend John, he's fucking brain's fucked up. Like, he's, memory's gone, he's all fucked up, and then he's like, but then, you know, we did, you know, like, he went through the whole ketogenic thing. We started working, and he goes, and it doesn't happen anymore, which actually is nice. But there was a part where I was pretty nervous to you. And I'm like, so I was repeating stories you didn't tell me? He's like, well, I didn't have a heart to tell you. I was like, fuck you. I was like, you know what? I hope you see. I hope I drive by and your car's broken down, because I'm going to drive by and throw something at you like a fucking Slurpee. But Rob's got a real cerebral way of landing blows, and like in kind of a almost like a heartfelt way. Like, yeah, you know, I didn't, you know, Tyler, you're really an annoying idiot, but, you know, I'm going to help you anyway because I'm so sorry for you. Yeah. And you're like, thanks, I think. Yeah,
no,
so, all right,
yeah, no. So he kept helping me, and you know, we just kept in contact and started working. And, you know, he was, you know, really impressed at, you know, how well I learned and how much time I put towards it. You know, I began every hour that I had available, I was studying this. And not just studying nutrition, actually, I studied nutrition in college. And that's what led me to where I was. You know, and I lived the hardcore CrossFit life and the hardcore paleo life. And again, those are what about killed me. So I began studying the actual human body and studying all the things piece by piece instead of studying what the government says, this is what's good for your body, you know. But then if we break it down and we study the body, then we study actual food. Don't study nutrition, study food and how food works and what it does when it's in there, and start to reverse engineer things. And then you put it together, you come up with a completely different solution than what the nutrition industry came up with. You know, and so I started putting these practices in my own life. Eating 300, a guy that was a strict paleo diet guy, dieter, I guess is the way to say, what do you call those? A paleo dieter?
You're just a paleo, bro.
You're just capital P paleo, because we have capital P and little p. So we always ask people, like, I'm paleo. I'm like, are you capital P or little p?
It's capital, like, the royal p. Capital P.
Capital paleo. P is like, I don't believe that these were 10,000 years
old. Yeah, I was that one that judged you. Like, if you're,
yeah, and then you're like, oh, ice cream.
Yeah, no, I hate those people.
Oh, you put salt on there? Can't have any salt because they, you know, paleo man would have never cultivated salt, which was Cordain's claim, which I never fucking believed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I never bought
they
that.
They did have hot sauce.
That's what I'm saying. Right? If
no,
they had
no.
Cholula, if Cholula was around, you can't tell me they wouldn't have drank.
Well, I mean, think about this. The thought, like, you know, you look at all these primitive hunting and this. I mean, the fact that salt cures meat, like, that would have been one of, like, you know, however, like, there was a story, I think it was about the Genghis Khan and his guys. What they would do is they would go slaughter an animal, take a big side of beef, and then they would throw it on the back of their horses, and then they would put a tallow or a blanket over it, and then they would ride, and, you know, ride these plains type riders, like the best horse warriors in history, and the salt from the horses would come through, and that would cure the meat, and then they would just pull up the blanket, cut off a piece, and eat it. Those fuckers' immune systems were probably, like, superhuman to be able to handle that. I mean, we'd probably kill us, but, like, that type of salt. So, like, the thought that there was, like, an ocean, and they were probably near an ocean, so they fished, and then they'll think that they wouldn't have, like, cultivated salt in some way. I just never really bought that, actually. And I remember when Cordain and I presented together, he brought that up, and, like, oh, the paleo man would have never eaten any salt. And I remember being like, if I buy that one's tough to make. So, I mean, especially if you look at, like, some, like, the Maasai and these others that actually, you know, drink a porridge of blood, and, you know, the salt content's a little, you know, obviously higher in blood, but that's not here nor there.
It's a heavy translated reference. But we kind of dove in, and I started applying all these new principles, and, you know, still staying away from, you know, super, you know, inflammatory foods, but introducing white rice, sweet potatoes, you know, unreal. Shocker, right?
Shocker.
And everything started getting better.
Wow, so you're doing a heavy, hard, glycolytic style of training, and you added some carbs back in.
You added carbs.
Next thing you fucking know, it's almost like this shit works.
When you finally understand that an athlete shouldn't eat like an Olsen twin, things start to, you become a real athlete. And that was
The Olsen twins survive on a diet of grilled cheese sandwiches and cigarettes and cocaine. So, and it's also known as the supermodel diet.
The supermodel diet.
And I think there's a book on that. It's called the supermodel.
They're great fighters too.
They are.
Well, yeah. Who was that?
That was God.
Oh, is that? I got no snare in my headphone. I can't hear the snare.
But no, then, you know, I just started applying these things in my own, and everything got easier, man. I mean, I started sleeping better. I started recovering. I leaned up. I immediately lost 10 pounds. Like, how does that happen? I just added 300 grams of carbs into my day, and I just lost 10 pounds. What in the world? Everything started getting better. Well, then I started making just huge weight cuts, 200 to 170, you know, eating the day of weigh-ins, which, you know, previously guys would take days, literally, and they still do, several days where they don't eat. You know, I've seen guys go 2-3 days without water, which is just absolutely silly. You know, if Bear Grylls wouldn't do it, you shouldn't do it as a professional athlete.
But is this something because, you know, obviously weight cuts are, you know, when people hear weight cut, most of the time they think like they think MMA. But for the most part, guys in boxing don't really do weight cuts. Like if you're a 170 guy, you're probably going to fight pretty close to your weight. So, I mean, I know like boxers don't really do huge weight cuts, but MMA world has huge weight cuts. The other sport that has gained notoriety recently, which had kind of fallen off. And I think like with the resurgence of raw powerlifting, now you're seeing guys like get in and, you know, hey, I'm going to, you know, I'm walking at 300, but I'm going to cut to 275 so I can do this. And, you know, I mean, we've seen some guys have some pretty horrific stuff. I mean, then, you know, guys really struggle with this. So, I mean, that might be, you know, as we kind of get into this stuff a little bit more, that might be another market where you'd be able, basically be able to go in and work with, you know, power lifters or different, you know, Olympic lifters or other athletes that might need to do a weight cut to make a specific.
Oh, yeah. And those weight cuts are so easy. They really are, especially when, you know, compared, starting with the sport that has the worst weight cuts in the world. And fine-tuning it to a fine art, the rest of it has become super easy. I work with a lot of high school wrestlers and people who actually do like 24-hour weigh-ins, and it's changed the way they work. You know, I've worked with some powerlifters, some Olympic lifters. But, you know, and then I started applying these principles, and it was miraculous, the difference people were seeing in me. Then I started helping some friends, and it just kind of snowballed from there. Some of my UFC friends, one of my buddies who used to fight at 205 and 185, UFC Zach Cummings, UFC calls him to fight at 170 for his first time ever. He's never fought at 170. And we make the weight cut, and people see him walking through the halls, like eating and drinking coffee the morning of weigh-ins. And, you know, even the UFC staff, like, really worried, like, what's your weight? He goes, I'm under. Like, I woke up a little bit under. I feel great. Couldn't believe it. He goes out there with a big win. Then I pick up a couple other guys, James Krause, Tim Elliott. James Krause, the guy who walks about 190, 195 pounds, has a six pack, 6 foot two, fights at 155. You know, James starts having some really big weight cuts. He ate before he'd had some really rough weight cuts. He was one of those guys who just didn't eat, just starved himself. He goes out there, he's eating great, you know, eating more the week of than previously he was during the entire camps. Like 3 weeks out, this guy was cutting his calories down to 1,000 calories, and we haven't eaten more than that the week of sometimes. He's just having these super easy weight cuts. Tim Elliott, same thing. And it just branches out. I keep dealing with these guys, and just that notoriety that I was getting just started gaining more and more attention. I started getting guys that actually had previously worked with other guys in the industry and had just noticed such a difference they felt when they worked with me. And you know, the differences, the before and afters, if you look at how they looked before they worked with me and how they do afterwards, it was just miraculous. And it just kind of snowballed from there. It's been amazing how fast, it's grown from a guy who learned. Again, we say, you know, you got to take those bumps on the head to really learn. And if you don't take those bumps, in my opinion, you'll never be really, truly good. At my own gym, I say a lot of times, you show me a guy who won't take extra steps, I'll show you a guy who won't go very far. That's exactly it.
I mean, dude, you proved it. I mean, we always, you know, for years in this podcast, I always talked about if you want to, you know, go learn something, you want to get knowledge, you want to, you know, improve yourself, you might have to get out of your basement or get out of your garage and come visit some people and travel and like go meet some stuff. I mean, Tyler and I have been recently talking, and next thing he goes, like, hey, I want to come visit. And he jumped on a plane and flew out here and has been hanging out with us for the last couple of days and training and really kind of sharing some great ideas. And I mean, to me, like, that's the mark of, you know, like when somebody puts himself out, like a young Luke Summers, just bright eyed, bushy tailed, ready to come out and take on the world. You know, that's
callous now, John.
Now you're callous, worn down, broken down. You know, texting those guys in the same right, too. I mean, I was telling Tyler the Philadelphia interning of Tex and Cali story. And I couldn't even fucking tell it because I was laughing too hard. How you guys thought that we were trying to punk you for the whole weekend. Little did you know, I just drive fast and we were supposed to take Uncle Dave on a cheesesteak adventure.
Yeah, probably now in hindsight, Tex, doesn't it seem just like a standard cert?
Very much so.
Well, like, what? So, like, when that, I always wanted to ask, like, what was going through your head? Like, was Callie like, are these guys fucking with us? Like, what's going on here? Like, they're fucking guys driving 100 miles an hour down fucking residential streets.
Tex, before you go, I'm going to give, like, the 30-second version of what happened. You know, it's in previous podcasts. Yeah. We had a cert in Philly, and Tex and Callie drove out. It was their, like, their 8-mile moment, their time to shine. They were going to assist in coaching, and we were going to grade them. And
they were going to come meet us and
determine if they were going to be candidates for future staff. And like, outside of staff, like endeavors outside of CrossFit football. And it was my first time in Philly, and I like to eat, and I wanted to eat three Philly cheesesteaks. And John's like, I got three places. It's going to be a lot of driving.
Having lived in Philadelphia for a number of years, you know, and working in South Philly, living downtown, like I knew the city, like, man, I was plugged in on the heartbeats of that place. And so like wherever you wanted to go in Philly, like, you know, whether it was Jim's, I mean, Nick's Roast Beef, I mean, any, you know, Tony Luke's, all these different spots. And so Uncle Dave had come up from Virginia, or down from Virginia Beach, or up, well, I forget where it is.
Over.
Yeah, just around. Say that. Yeah. He showed up from Virginia Beach. So he's in town, and like Luke and him are like, man, let's get some cheesesteaks. Let's get some fucking cheesesteaks. And so there's another thing, and those of you guys that might have been to South Philly, or it might even be in South Philly, there's one thing you don't do in South Philly, it's drive fucking slow. Because like police or stop signs, really is just an acronym for slow to observe police or pedestrians. So you just slow to observe pedestrians. So like in South Philly, and here's a crazy thing, people park in the middle of the road, people park everywhere. Like there's really no street law other than like the, you know, fucking Aleister Crowley, you know, do as thou will driving law in South Philly. So like we like are Tony Luke's. I'm like, hey guys, follow me. Little did I know that Tex drives like a 87-year-old woman.
Cali drive? Cali drive.
Yeah, okay. We had to on the highway exchange seats, and she took over, and then we caught y'all.
Yeah. So we like get in, and I'm like, hey, follow me. Because I'm like fucking roasting the tires.
John's got like a fucking the supercharged Crown Vic.
Yes, remember yes. You got like that's my preferred car in South Philly is whatever the cop car is. And I have a deal whenever we go rent. Preferably, I like to get a cop car, and it just solves a lot less or more problems than it brings, I guess you could say. And so I get in, and I'm just fucking lighting up the tires as I four wheel slide and shoot down 2 Street, bam, and take off. And these guys are like, and they're like. So we get up and we get to the first place and I order up. I'm like, hey, we're going to want like this, this, and this. I order like 6 sandwiches. I'm like, don't worry, guys. I got this. And they're like, these sandwiches come out and there's like bread and cheese and all this crap. Like,
very unpaleo. Yeah, like, you would not have liked this.
That's what I thought it was a test.
And it wasn't even cheese.
It was like artificially cheese.
What Matt LaLonde considers one of the like what the most poisonous things you could consider.
Pretty much that and Kool-Aid. Like a diet of Cheese Whiz and Kool-Aid would be like the epitome of LaLonde's like worst nightmare. So we get into this whole situation, fucking sandwich them up. Like these guys are like looking at us like thinking that we're like these CrossFit football monks that eat just like, you know, 14 almonds and this like, oh, they need to, you know, and we're like, fuck it, let's eat these cheesesteaks. So we pound these things and like, oh, that's pretty good. I'm like, let's go to the next one. So we jump in the car and we light up to the next place. We went from Tony Luke's. I think we went to Geno's or Pat's, and I made it get a Pat's and a Geno's. And then we went to one other place. I think it was Jim's or Nick's Roast Beef. And so we get like more sandwiches. And at this point, they're like, these guys have to be fucking with us. Like, there's no fucking way that these guys are eating 3 cheesesteaks. And Luke's just over there, just like opening, like Luke can unhinge his jaw and like swallow it like a snake. Well, we got our genetic testing done, and there's an FTO gene, which is basically the fat gene, is what they call it. And what it means is there's a certain genetic type that has ghrelin doesn't signal the same way. Like, most people eat and they get full and they stop eating. And there's certain people that have FTO gene that don't get the right signaling.
Luke's never been
one of these people. So his signaling just is like, eat more. So Luke is probably one of the most impressive eaters. And I've been around some fucking serious eaters. This dude can fucking eat. And he literally just unhinged his jaw, swallowed the thing. Like, reminds me of like the mask with Jim Carrey where he like opens his mouth and swallows the bomb and it blows up. He goes, spicy.
Or like a pelican. Like when a pelican gets like a big old fish and just.
So we go that, we get another one, and then we light up to the third place. And at this point, like, I think Tex and Callie are ready to leave. And Callie's fucking beyond because, one, I'm driving 100 miles an hour down residential streets and eating cheesesteaks. So, and they didn't really tell us that until later on. They were like, we thought you guys were punking us.
Completely. And so, we parked illegally, so we're risking it all. That was our 8-mile moment.
Yeah. But, I mean, Tex, if that were to happen again, isn't it just another fucking Saturday?
Absolutely. So Luke and I have done this test with other guys that apply to interns, and then we never hear back from them.
Yeah. So,
well, we have a couple rules on potential interns. One, if somebody on the seminar staff offers you a beer or a drink and you say no, you instantly are DQ'd.
Or you better have a good reason.
Or you better have a good reason. Like, I just got off a fucking 7-day bender because we always have this deal where, like, if you're not good enough to sit and have a beer or a drink with, like, your coworkers, then you probably aren't going to be a very good, fun travel partner. You know, because, I mean, like, we always end up with some cool stuff. Like, you know, Luke and I were supposed to go to Oktoberfest. And then Luke got his passport stolen
just because you're
way
fucking,
to fucking airport.
You whip around like you're fucking Luke Duke or Bo Duke and the Dukes of Hazzard. It's like, slow down. Just take a breath. Let me get my stuff. We don't have time for your stuff. That's my passport.
As I remember, we were late to get there because you were over there packing fucking willy-nilly
late
t-shirts.
To get there. Hang on. Listen, Mr. Punctuality. All right. I'm sitting here waiting for a fucking pickup. And you're like, I get a text like, I'm coming in hot. I can't stop. So I got to get everything in my arm. Yeah, I jump in the back of the truck.
So Luke gets his backpack. He like somehow takes his backpack out of the car. We drive away to the gas station, realize it, make a U-turn. And some dude snatches his backpack, which has his passport, a Compex, and his notebook, which has like all of the secrets of CrossFit football and Power Athlete in it. And
like 180 pages of just deep thoughts by John Wellborn.
Yeah. Because so when Luke first came on, he shows up and like 3 days later, my wife had the twins. So like the only way that we could prep any of this stuff is he'd have to show up at my house at like 9 or 10 o'clock. And like, I'm like, come to the door with like kids. And like holding my daughter as we're basically, I'm talking to him about all this stuff and just over there writing. And it would be from like 10 to 1 a.m. And we just worked on this stuff. But so we go and he loses his backpack and like, we're like, fuck, what do we do? Call Tex. Tex, can you be on a plane in 2 hours to Munich or Nuremberg, Germany? Tex is like, I'm in. I'll be there.
Let's go.
And Tex and I had a great adventure at Oktoberfest.
I don't know. It sounded boring to me compared to me and Tex's adventure.
Yeah. I don't know, Tex. All I know is they both ended up at the same way where we both passed out and did catch the train and had to both take a taxi home.
Yeah.
Yeah, great time. Right. Great time.
Well, let's circle back here, Tex.
I got a good question. So just talking about working with fighters, I've worked with a few boxers, and they are tough athletes to break. Can you talk about the fine line between making weight and performance? I know you can't fight without making weight, and some of the stories you talked about, those experiences definitely would hurt your performance. So how do you break your fighters and have that discussion of, you know, performance and make weight?
Yeah, man, it's you again. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. You see that all the time. And when you're coming in, you know, with a guy, a lot of times, especially if they're winning because they get used to, you know, the same thing that I was having these bad weight cuts and I was winning. And a lot of them, they don't want to change anything because if it's working, you know, why change it? But I like to kind of explain to the guys, you know, I don't try to tell them, hey, well, you could have done a lot better. You know, you don't say that to a professional athlete, you know, and then a lot of times they listen. I'm like, hey, you know, let me show you what this is actually doing to your body. You know, you won that fight, but let's talk about when you're 50, if you get there. And I kind of explain to them what they're doing to themselves, explain to them like, hey, you know, your heart is about to give up. Your adrenals are about to give up. Let me tell you what your adrenals do for you. You know, you start talking to these, you know, these mid-20s, early 30 males about how their entire lives are going to change a decade down. They're going to start forgetting stuff. They're you know, they'll be lucky if they have a sex life, things like that. They start to listen. Like, oh, wow, didn't know this was messing me up. So at first, I just kind of show them what this is doing to them in the long run and really go into the details of that. Then we kind of bring them back down. Like, listen, there's a much easier way to do this. You don't have to suffer. You know, I promise we're going to make weight. We're going to do all the things we were doing as far as, you know, you're going to make weight, you're going to go in there, you're going to perform, but this weight cut thing doesn't have to suck. Once you just convince them that your way is going to make the process suck less, they're in. You know, because that's the thing. Fighters and athletes, a lot of times, they don't necessarily, they don't think of things in terms of, you know, like, how's that going to actually help me in a fight? Because if they're winning, they're winning. So we try to make them realize how much better they're just going to feel throughout the whole process. Then they go in there and they notice the difference. Then they're hooked. And it does, man. When you have a bad weight cut, it's doing things you don't even understand. You know, and the whole thing is a lot of these fights, when I see one go into a third round, I can know, you know, I'll know immediately that guy had a really bad weight cut. And then it'll later come out that he had a bad weight cut. Well, yeah, of course, you know, you dehydrate. A weight cut is the process of dehydration. That is how we do it. You know, we lose water, but it doesn't take much water loss to see a significant dip in performance. And these guys, they're getting far beyond their ability to rehydrate in that 24 hours. And a lot of them, in fact, they're not rehydrating, and the rehydration process is it's crucial. You know, in a lot of ways, it's more important than the actual making weight process. So we get these guys, and you know, we start teaching them all these different methods. And you know, before they would, you know, lay on their back for days before the fights, and we've got guys, you know, walking around, you know, shadow boxing at weigh-ins. They feel great. Then they go out there for their fights. They don't have cotton mouth, or they're cotton mouth, which, you know, is common for fighters. 24 hours later, they're peeing clear. All these things just never happened before, and it's hard for them to believe because they just ate a whole lot more than they were. You know, so they're coming into these fights fully recovered. They're coming in, their bodies aren't fighting to recover at the same time. You know, you're trying to recover from really this stress and this, you know, bodily injury you just put yourself through in the weight cut. And now I'm asking my body to perform at a high level to win this fight. Well, we've cut out all the crazy stress. We've cut out all the bodily harm we've done through the weight cut. So now all your body has to do is perform. You know, we've saved all of your energy. We've saved all of these cellular processes for this one focus of hurting the guy across the cage. You know, and that's where you see a big difference. You know, you see it all the time. And even in the UFC, these guys going in, that had a bad weight cut, they just do not perform like they should. Their body's trying to heal them from this sickness, this horrible week. You know, and the body's job is not to make you win. Like, that's not what your body's designed for. Your body's designed to stay alive. So if you're giving it two choices, stay alive, win this fight, it's going to choose stay alive, and it's going to put, you know, much more effort into that than it is your, you know, your success. It cares about you far beyond, the paycheck.
So all these commissions now are, you know, they're banning IVs. Do you think that's going to change the weight cutting culture?
Yeah.
They're banning
IVs post weigh-in because they're using USADA, right? Is it USADA or WADA, one of the two?
Yeah. And it's, different commissions across the world. But the thing is,
what's the theory behind cutting, why USADA doesn't allow people to use?
Yeah, they won't let them use IVs post weigh-in rehydrate.
It's more of, it's part of the PED witch hunt, because you can cloud, performance drug test. You can cloud a drug test for PDs with IVs.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of guys in this sport.
Oh, the idea that, hey, I'm going to dehydrate, and then all of a sudden I'm going to flush all this fluid.
Yeah.
It's going to basically dilute it and reduce specific gravity.
Yes.
You know what?
It's a lot of effort.
The witch hunt for the drug stuff. I mean, you know, and I understand why they do it. It's this idea, like, you know, you got to keep the efficacy of the sport in this. But the problem is like, you know, like at what lengths are you going to do it? I mean, it's got to the point where it's like, you know, you're just so fucking over the top with it, you know.
But I'm saying, like, his weight cutting sounds like more healthy than what most people do. Well, so is that going to be a change?
And
is everybody going to have what he does?
Most high level athletes are very polarizing, like extreme people. You fucking have to be extreme. You have to be somewhat reckless to be able to basically get out and do this job. So I think what Tyler's really talking about is this idea of, like, instead of you doing nothing up until the last week and then trying to cut it, like, let's start it a little bit earlier and, like, actually, like, have a goal and, like, hey, we got to be here and here. And actually he's bringing, like, a thinking man's kind of
don't broadcast the secrets.
I mean, I'm not giving the secrets out, but I think, like, what's really refreshing about Tyler is, you know, having been a high-level athlete and a somewhat cerebral guy, I think he's the perfect guy to really look at this thing and be like, all right, here's the problem. This is how we do it smart. And instead of just, like, bringing another, you know, type A, fucking reckless, fucking extreme individual in.
Just,
like,
cut a pinky off.
I'll fucking do this with you. You know what? We'll get like 100 pounds of Epsom salt, a hot bath, and some trash bags, and a fucking Aerodyne, and we'll get 100 pounds off you in 20
minutes. One pinky over, we're gonna have to fucking get one off.
Yeah, you know what? We might have to fucking trim your foreskin. I don't know.
Man, I've seen some crazy.
I'm sure there's dudes that are like shaving their body, thinking know, this fucking butt hair I have might weigh a fucking ounce. So I mean, it's really you know, and I think what's really refreshing and getting to know Tyler a little bit is you know, this idea of being a bit of a thinking man and really kind of approaching this from a non-crazy person you know, deal, which is,
well,
really
it's counterculture. It's kind of challenging the idea that is this really the best way to fucking accomplish this?
Well, right? You know, and we see it in the training, and I think, you know, we get hit up, and we get hit up recently by guys like all the programs and all everything I've seen out there. You guys are the least non-crazy people we've come across. Mm-hmm. You know, you have all these, you know, hey, look at
me.
Yeah, just like, hey, you know what? I take a gram of test a week, but like, hey, if you follow this training, you'll totally look like me. And you're like, dude, come on, dude. Like, let's be serious with this shit.
That was sarcasm, guys. No,
yeah, I'm sarcasm. I mean, yeah,
because someone's going to soundbite that.
Yeah. Good thing this isn't live, then. You'll probably cut that shit out or bleep it. You know, and I think what Tyler's really talking about is this idea of, like, let's actually take a thinking man's approach and, like, you know, I mean, they call boxing sweet science for a long time. And what do they call fucking MMA? Fucking ground and pound.
Yeah.
I mean, but guys, you take extreme personalities that are, like, when you devise, like, when they talk about your style and your style is ground and pound, mm-hmm. I mean, that's really Luke Summers' style at the bar when he went out when he was single. You know, go out and have a couple drinks, we're going to ground and pound. You know what that means? I'm going to drink a lot.
I was more of a rope-a-dope guy.
So you're a little more sweet science, a little rope-a-dope, a little slide, a little back.
And then at the end, I'm going to take
him down. I like to call that dirty boxing. You know, that's another style, which to me, I love watching the dirty boxing. But I can bring him in and, you know, I'll let me fight up. And there's a little bit of a rope-a-dope, a little up against the cage. So let me beat your body up without taking too many blows.
So circling back, I guess, does this, back to what Fisher was saying, this is going to affect a lot of people's strategy,
it's
right?
Going to be really bad, actually. But
how are they going to pop people for IVs?
I've seen a few different ways. They're going to test for plastic metabolites, which, when you start looking at that online, it's really in depth. Like, they're putting a lot of effort to stop this. You know, it's very silly. And I'm very much against it.
I think it's fucking ridiculous.
I'm very much against it.
What if a guy gets sick and has diarrhea or has some problems? Well, I mean, you can give fluids and help them. I mean, I've been sick and got an IV.
Yeah, and here's the problem, though. What we'd said, a lot of guys, they're stuck in their ways. If you've always done an IV, how many fighters, you know, it could be great for business for me, because a lot of my guys don't, you know, we don't prefer IVs. I've had guys that have used them because they swear they feel better, but we get them down to, you know, half of what they were using. Then we eventually wean them. We don't use them. So you've got these guys that they've always cut weight. They cut weight wrong. They don't know how to rehydrate, but they do an IV. So now you're taking out their only means of rehydration. What are they going to do? Well, dehydration doesn't just affect performance. Long-term health, you're going to start seeing guys with more brain damage, concussion, because you start getting that fluid around your brain. You start pulling from that. You're going to see a lot more of that happen. And I just think that's silly, man. These commissions and stuff are in place to keep fighters healthy. In fact, that's really should be the goal of, you know, these WADA and things like that. They're not there to ban this evil drug because they're afraid that someone might be faster. They're there because, you know, supposedly these drugs are dangerous. You know, we care about the athletes, these are dangerous.
Well, isn't the idea more too, and I always think about it, they are kind of dangerous in a way, because you give some guy, like, I mean, if you put two equal fighters and one guy is, fucking on the high octane, the other guy isn't. I mean, you know, there's a potential for stuff. Yeah. I mean, I think that was in the NFL why they got so twisted on the stuff early, because all of a sudden they got these, you know, like, you know, 400-pound gorillas that's out there slaying each other. And I think they had to do something. But I think the fight game, it's so like there's a culture, you know, like you said, the weight cuts. Like, I just figured, like, most guys want to fight bigger, so you got to cut weight. Yes. It's like every guy that wants to go powerlift, maybe, you know, if you're 300 pounds, you either are 330 cutting to 308 or you're 300 cutting to 275. And it's like, because, you know, all of a sudden you rehydrate, you get back. But, you know, if you cut too much weight and you do it poorly, then all of a sudden you kind of lose a lot of your body's ability. So, I mean, I kind of go back and forth on that stuff.
And sometimes it's cutting weight can be an advantage or a disadvantage. If you do it right, it's an advantage over your opponent. If you do it wrong, it's a total disadvantage. But, you know, the IV thing, I hate it. It's not going to hurt or affect my guys. We don't do IVs. We rehydrate. You know, we get digestive enzymes back into the body so the body can actually use the food that we're putting into it. We rehydrate correctly. We actually have a process we go through. So it's not going to affect my guys, but it will affect the sport. You know, and I care a lot about the sport. So, you know, that it does bother me. And I hope they rethink it.
Yeah, I think their initial goal was to try to get guys to walk around closer to the fight.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
But, yeah, it's not either way, it gets competition. You're going to cut weight.
You always want to be bigger.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that has always been in the wrestling community. Like the saunas, I remember even in high school, the guys that would wrestle were always, like, with the track suits, jumping ropes, sauna stuff. They'd be in there, like, in the wrestling room, like they, you know, turning on space heaters, and, like, everybody cut weight is almost like this, you know, practice. It's just what you do. But I don't ever remember really that in boxing. I mean, I'm sure there guys are, but it's not really that thing. Like, if you're, you know, like, all of those guys fight pretty close. I mean, it's like bodybuilding too. I mean, you know, you see these guys balloon up to, you know, 300 pounds in the off season, and then they compete at 2 something. But, you know, you remember Arnold and Franco and those guys, they were like, no, we never do that. We're actually the heaviest we are is actually when we step on stage, because that's our best looking condition. So I always wondered, like, those guys had kind of a different mentality. So
yeah, it's weird, man. And some of the things we've seen, you know, not to get off track, but just to give you some.
Well, that's what we do best.
This is you're talking about what guys have done to make weight. It's absurd, and there's certain levels when you're stopping. This is a wrestling story. When a dude says, I got to stop my McDonald's, I don't think I'm going to make weight. Why are we stopping my McDonald's? This makes no sense. He comes out, he spends like a few minutes in McDonald's. We let him, like, okay, well, maybe he just gave up. He gave up. He's hitting McDonald's, like, screw it, I'm done. I'll play football. Well, he comes back, he goes, I think I'm good. What happened? He goes, don't worry about it. It goes in, dude makes weight. He wasn't making weight when we got in the van. Wasn't making weight when we got in McDonald's. We come back out, this guy makes weight. What did you do? He goes, well, I went and I asked for a bottle of Dasani. So I got a bottle of Dasani. He said, I poured a little bit of it out, and then I asked for salt. He said, I got salt. I put salt in the bottle of Dasani, shook that up, you know, bent over and gave myself an enema.
Oh,
like how many steps into that did you have to get? Like, there's no part of that feels like a good idea.
He shoved the Dasani up his ass, he squeezed it in, so the salty water ended up fucking making him fucking shit himself.
And then he cleansed himself. An enema.
That probably would have been the first time he did that.
Yeah, and that's
he's like, you know, it's no big deal.
You know, we start to think, like, well, this guy's been making weight all this time.
Like, that's a great way to shed some pounds for a match.
This is really
cigarettes and cocaine and fucking grilled cheese sandwiches, bro.
Yeah, I've seen guys, like you said, I've seen guys shave their whole body. I've seen idiots standing on their head. That's actually a big thing. They feel like if you stand on your head, when the blood goes to your head, you're going to weigh lighter. Never mind the fact that blood's not going anywhere. It's still in your body. Like, I don't know if they expect it to, like come out of their nose, you know, which if that happens, you're probably not fighting. And these techniques still happen. I mean, I promise it is absolutely.
You can go back and watch one of the pillars of Power Athlete Cinema, Vision Quest.
It's one of the best.
Yeah, you got Loudon Swain cutting weight. I mean, as we're talking about this, I'm like, you know, he's getting nosebleeds, and the shoot's like, you got to make weight? He's like, yeah, I'm going to make weight. It's almost like a rite of passage. It's part of the sport. Like, there's this idea that, like, you know, if, you know, like you said, like, you, you know, you showed up to the Ultimate Fighter and you were close, you know, underweight. And, like, you know, those guys that were bigger kind of like looked at you and be like, what do you mean this guy doesn't have to cut weight? Everybody should cut weight. You should probably cut weight even though you don't have to cut weight.
Even if you don't have to. I mean, it's just there's people who have died. You don't know their names. It's very quickly, you know, swept under the rug, but it's going to happen. I mean, I fully believe that if something's not done, it's going to happen at a high level, and you're not going to be able to shove that under the rug. It's not going to be something
you think you think if they made the weigh-ins closer to the fight, like, for example, if it was like an hour before, guys would still fucking go weight.
Yeah, I think all you're doing by doing that is preventing rehydration. Yeah. So I think you're going to have to. I mean, there's a few things, you know. Obviously, like I said, that my business with fighters exists because, you know, there are fighters who, you know, are intelligent enough to say, hey, I don't know this. I don't know how to hit people. I'm going to outsource this. And, you know, I'm a big fan of that, outsource something. You know, you always outsource to someone better than you. So there's fighters that are doing that, but there's a lot of fighters who just set in their ways. So promotions might have to start, you know, hiring guys to go through and oversee all these. You know, it's just, I don't think there's any real right way. I think it's just one of those things. It's a greedy sport, man. Everybody wants to say this isn't a violent sport. This isn't a, but yeah, it is. You're getting a cage half naked and beating each other half to death. It's a bunch of greedy, grimy people. I mean, that's just the sport.
You realize that when you go back, and we talked with Stephen G. Miller, who's our buddy, it's boxing and really wrestling, and this pugilist is like one was the original, one of the original Olympic sports. I mean, yeah. If not the like the biggest separator from it. I mean, you know, those guys like, like there's all, you know, like I remember in college, there'd be these, different bases and different shots they would show. And like boxing being like, I think it was maybe there was four or six sports. It was like 100 meter dash fight. And they had all these wrestling, but there was boxing and there was wrestling. I mean, these are as primal a sport as you could ever do. And I think like what part of the reason the UFC's had such great success is really because boxing became such a fucking joke. And like having grown up a boxing fan, and I remember seeing like Sugar Ray Leonard and Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and just like the fights that I remember seeing in like the 80s when I was a kid were like what boxing was to me. And now you have this fucking, you know, bullshit with Floyd Mayweather where he gets $300 million to basically never get hit. And, you know, he talks about being the best fighter ever who fucking never gets in and, you know, I mean, basically dances with people to the end.
He's the best fighter on Kanye West is the best.
Well, he just still proclaimed. But I mean, the guy makes $300 million. I mean, yeah, and, and I think like the other thing which has really killed boxing is there has not been a legitimate watchable heavyweight that I would pay for a fucking pay-per-view. I mean, like the Klitschko brothers, I mean, they are just not that exciting. There hasn't been like, I remember like as a kid, the excitement of seeing Tyson go play, like I remember, or go fight. And I remember my dad like having it on the TV. Yeah. And I remember all of our neighbors like there, like watching people holding jerseys, nobody talking, and just being like, oh my God, I mean, it was so electrifying to watch him come out and fight. And even Holyfield, like to me, that was a golden age. And now, like with still boxing is they don't have a legitimate type of fighter.
Well, here's the thing. I wrote a big article on this in school, and you know, the professor didn't really appreciate it, but it's true. People love violence, and boxing is no longer violent. It's a sport. They made it too much of an art. People love that. People, NASCAR's boring. It's left-hand turns. Wrecking is awesome. We were driving yesterday and we spent, 5 minutes watching videos of dudes wrecking their nuts on a bicycle. Hilarious. Like, we don't want that to happen to us, but it's hilarious because it's happened to someone else. They were bike thieves. But we love our culture. We
have forever. I mean,
gladiators.
Look at the Roman mob. I mean, the mob. You know, I mean, you can go back and like, you know, they entertain the mob with death. I mean, you see the movie Gladiator and you look at some of the stuff and you don't really like understand until you actually read the original texts of like the gladiators and like the original fucking accounts of how many people died in a single day.
Yeah.
And then like the gladiators would go fight and they would just feed Christians to the lions for fucking people just to see bloodlust.
Yeah,
so but like that type of bloodlust, I mean, it's the reason the NFL, because people want to see big, strong dudes run as fast as they can and ram their face. I mean, dude, like, so during the game when we would have TV timeouts, our favorite thing to do was we would stand and we'd watch the crowd for all the fights. And dudes were literally up there beating the dog shit out of each other because opposing fans wearing a different color or somebody says something. And we're out there and dudes are up there like, we're like, are you fucking kidding me? Like you guys paid to be here and you're like, the only reason you're mad at somebody is because they're wearing opposing jersey. Like it never really struck, but people are inherently violent. There's bloodlust and you know, no matter how far you think that we've evolved and got away from that. And that's that Jack London poem, Skulls of Our Enemy. One of my favorites, talks about like, no matter how far we get civilized, we're not that far from the person that was drinking the blood of their enemies from their fucking skull.
Dang.
And like, I think something like the UFC, brings that stuff up. I mean, people want to see a bit of that barbarism, and that's why like the UFC sells. And, the brothers, the guys that own it.
The Fertitas.
Yeah, the Fertitas brothers have done a great job of basically being the mob of this thing, where, like, you know, there's no union for you guys. I mean, you bring these guys in, you know, you fucking fight here, you fight here. If you do anything, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Go fight for Strike Force or something. Yeah. And, so, you know, they bring these guys in, and it's, I mean, there's a reason why. And what's even more amazing to me now is the hottest fighter in the UFC, and they're their biggest earners, Ronda Rousey.
Chick.
Yeah. I mean, like, you want to talk about, I mean, you know, like, if you would have told me 5 years ago that the biggest star in one of the world in MMA is a female MMA fighter, I wouldn't have believed you. But, like, seeing it, I'm like, dude, she's exciting to watch, and she rocks people. And
so we all, like the whole spectator base that you're talking about with to see the barbarians bash each other, we all tune in and get to see the glory, you know, the 10 minutes of just, the brawl. What I've often wondered is, after a fight like that, let's say, or like after you're about in the Ultimate Fighter, what is the recovery process like? Oh, like, what is the next day like? Then the next week? Then the next?
Yeah. Well, you obviously know, like, so those of you guys have ever seen the 30 for 30, where they go and they follow, or the 24 hours leading up to the fight, where they follow the fighters for boxing. One of my, like, I enjoy watching that more than the fight.
Yeah.
But they never show the 24 hours after the fight, because it's like, and like just like the Ultimate Fighter, right? They show everything, and then what do they show after, like, the winner, like, whatever, everybody happens. Because, I mean, really, like, you know, the only image we've ever got was, I think it was Rocky, where they're, like, in the hospital. They're both, like, in the hospital room, like, fucked up, ready to try to fight each other again.
It's fairly accurate, though. I mean, Yeah, I've had fights that I won. There's jokes. I'm 7-1 professionally. The only time I've ever not been hurt in a fight was, well, my last fight went really well. But the one that I lost, you know, I look great. I'm one of these guys, I get hurt every time. That's what I said, man, it's really a lose-lose. It's very rare that you go in there and you don't come out with some form of injury. I've had fights that I was on crutches for a week after that I won. You know, I won, but I'm on crutches. Two fights ago, I took a knee to the mouth. I had a 2-inch through-and-through hole in my bottom lip and broke my palate plus my tooth. I got a tooth knocked out. I won this fight in a minute and a half. So, you know, it's like, yeah, I win, and now I can't enjoy any of those foods that I wanted to eat because I can't eat. You know, so those are the times you start looking at the sport. You're like, wow, this is weird that we do this. Because even when you win, you lose, your body loses some way, you know, you've had something go wrong. And that's the things that, you know, I've had times I couldn't walk for days. When you cut weight wrong, you're messed up for weeks after. I'm saying it's not uncommon for guys that have a bad weight cut to not use the bathroom for days, because their body is hoarding all that, and they get, you know, I've heard people having to go to the hospital for days after because their body's just so engorged with fluids, they're just so bloated and everything, they actually start to have problems with that. It's miserable. It's really not, you know, it's every now and then, if you have a really good one, you might be back in the gym Monday to cheer on your buddies and, like, help them, especially if you got, you know, you're a good teammate, you got a buddy coming up that's getting ready to fight. But usually, man, it takes a lot of recovery time. I mean, you're, you know, even when you win, you lose, you're beat up, something's broken.
Like a month?
I've had those, you know, I've had months, but traditionally most guys, you know, take a week off.
Yeah.
You know,
and then a slow crawl back,
and then kind of get right back into it a little bit, you know, which a lot of guys, the thing is, after that weight cut, they binge eat for a week or two. And, you know, again, that's one of the things I try to get my guys away from, because, you know, now they've introduced all this food into their body that they didn't eat during camp. And now they're going to go back to training on those foods, and it's going to mess with their, you know, their heart rhythm gets off, everything's messed up. The elevated cortisol, and they start training with that. So I try to even influence guys recover. You know, you're not going to tell a guy who just fought and just made, you know, just made weight, fought and won, you're not going to tell him you can't enjoy food for a little bit. But, you know, we try to rein them in as soon as we can.
Yeah.
You know, we don't limit how
and
much.
And I'd imagine
they eat, but
even stuff. Even after, like, as it becomes a lifestyle, you know, I think you look at a cheat day now. When I've been dialed in, relatively dialed in, to know what the right foods are to eat. Like, I'm not fucking going to crush a cake. Like,
yeah,
I might get some steak, maybe a sandwich, like, nothing too crazy. Yeah. But
Oh, you were eating up some of those cupcakes.
Because you guilted me into eating cupcakes. What was the first thing you said?
I was like,
got some cupcakes. I'm like,
oh, well, it was your birthday, cupcake. And I made sure to get you some cupcakes.
And you're like, eat this cupcake.
Because
and
I didn't have like, any, one so bite. Sure you had
cupcakes. You pelican that cupcake now is what you're talking
about. So I was like, okay, I'll eat four cupcakes. I'm like,
well, just one. Tyler, I know you got to fly out of here pretty soon, so, and we're actually right about at that point. So, I mean, awesome podcast. Thanks for coming to spend some time with us. It was great, and you know, hopefully we work together in the future. So, but for our listeners, if they want to get in touch with you, or if they think they can use your services, where do they go? What do they need to know?
Yeah, man, a few different ways. You can actually go to themeleeway.com. It's a website. It's a fairly new website we're still working on. But MELEEway.com. That's probably the best way to reach me. Forms you can fill out if you actually want to, you know, inquire about my services. You know, I do consultation services. I do diet plans, things like that. That's an excellent way to reach me. I own a CrossFit gym in Tennessee. If anybody's ever in the Tennessee area, stop by. We've got an amazing facility. It's 16,000 square foot facility. Perfect if you're following, the Field Strong or any of those things. It's all turf. We have sleds, slam balls. We literally have everything you need. For that, and those are the best ways to get in touch with me, and hopefully it'll become more and more easy because I plan on blowing this industry out of the water. So
yeah, and I think you got it because Tyler showed us a ton of what he's been doing with his clients, and that's everybody from the couch potato who's just starting to get active to these fighters, and everybody has similar results, which is increased performance and increased aesthetics.
Yep.
Like, it's a no-brainer. So
yeah, when you perform well, you look well. That's just always
form follows function, man. Yep. That's one of the staple taglines around here. But Tex, did you have any other questions for Tyler?
No, just say much respect for any fighter. Definitely fighting, boxing is one of the examples I use at our football seminar in terms of testing your training. You either win or you lose. So it's just much respect for the small margin of error and y'all just kicking ass.
Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Well, another good show in the books, man. Again, thanks, Tyler, and safe travels, and we'll see you soon, man.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, everyone, for letting me guest host this episode of Power Athlete Radio. I strongly urge you to purchase and install any software offered by Skynet. With it, we can all do great things. I hope to speak to you again in the near future. This is Chauncey signing off for Power Athlete Radio. Until next time, bye.